Hello,
everybody,
and
welcome
to Ghoul Society. That's my big sister, Jamie.
And that's my little sister, Sarah. We are grateful to be recording on the unceded, stolen territories of the Songhees and Esquimalt First Nations and the Lekwungen and Wasanich peoples whose historical relations with the land continue to this day. As uninvited guests, we are committed to disrupting racism and colonial violence within ourselves, our families, and our communities. By listening to this podcast, you've officially been inducted into the Ghoul Society.
Jamie's back! Woo! Wait, which one's the applause? Close enough.
That's what everyone's doing now that I'm back.
Laughing?
They're like, get this girl off the fucking show.
Oh.
Maybe, I don't know.
No.
That's what, They're like, yay. Well, yay. You know, I really loved the Skeptic episode with Montana.
Yeah.
I'm expecting another one.
Okay, well, there was going to be another one, and then we just didn't record it. So.
Yeah, fair.
You know.
Well, now that we're officially live, I have something to give to you.
We're live? Okay. Wait, let me get it on video. I'm making a TikTok, guys. I'm a TikToker now.
Hey, oh, what's up,
Follow
TikTok?
Follow us on TikTok.
Hey.
GhoulSociety.pod, I think.
Love it.
You find us.
You'll
find
us.
What am I getting?
Okay. I have to get up.
Okay. Is this what you've been working on for months and months and months?
Yes.
Oh, boy. Should I close my eyes? Okay. Yeah, I'm just closing my eyes. Is it big? I don't know what's happening.
Ready?
Yeah.
And look.
Ah! Oh my god! Oh my god! Wait, keep holding it because I want to show them on TikTok. Oh my god.
Ding,
oh my god. Okay, that's gonna fall over.
I'll set you back up.
It's so sick.
Yeah. So Sarah is holding a knitted sweater that I've been working on for a few months. It has a dark gray background. We'll post a photo of it, but it has a dark gray background. It has purple bats with hearts. It has white ghosts and pumpkins. It has yellowy moons and stars. And then it has orange kitties at the bottom because it's kind of like Simba, Sarah's kitty. And it's like supposed to be kind of like an oversized, cozy sweater vibe for fall.
Oh, yeah.
Yay. Oh, it looks so good. Wait. Oops.
Okay. Hold on.
How do I look?
So good. I love it. I knew it would look really good on you, too.
You guys, this is the sickest thing ever. How sick do I look?
So sick. Yeah.
Hell yeah.
It's beautiful.
Thank you. Oh my god, it's perfect.
You're welcome.
You blocked it, right?
Yeah.
Yay! Thank you, sister.
You're welcome.
It's so nice.
Your Halloween sweater.
Is this my engagement present?
Sure. I started it, I think, before then.
Before you knew?
No. It hasn't been that long.
Great.
But I started it a while ago.
Wow, this is great.
Yeah.
What's it made out of, wool?
Yep.
Wow, oh my god.
For all my knitting nerds out there, it's Drops Nepal. That's the kind of wool it is.
Whoa.
And it's super beautiful. I actually don't know what the blend is, but I feel like there's maybe some alpaca in it because it's fluffy.
It's so hairy.
Let me just look for a moment. Okie dokie.
This thing is so sick. I need to see it. It's perfect. I also really love a tight neck.
Oh, good.
I love a tight neck with oversized fit.
Yeah, phew. Good. Because I struggled.
Really? Did you have to redo it?
Yes.
I know. I love a tight neck when I'm wearing oversized.
And I was worried that it was going to be like, I know it's like too big for like, well, okay, here's the thing about sweaters I'm realizing is that actually, it's so fun when they're really big. Yeah. Like, oversized is a vibe, and I think it looks really, really good.
Yeah, it does. No, it literally fits me perfectly.
Yeah. So it's 65% wool, 35% alpaca, made in Peru.
Yeah, it's the nice stuff.
Yeah, the wool is from South America, so. Yep. Lots of hard work went into that bad boy, and it was really fun, because I'm just getting into doing color work projects.
Yeah, I was going to say, it looks so good.
Thanks.
Because I know that you haven't done a lot of color, you've just done, like...
Like base ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like yarn that has different color as you knit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, like some self-striping ones. But yeah. Also, a lot of the time, I just do, like, single colors.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you can see, like, on the back, kind of, that's, like, where all the threads are, you know?
Yeah, it looks so good. I was wondering what you've been making me all these months.
I forgot that I told you I was making you something.
Yeah, I've been like, what is she doing?
That's so funny.
And now you know. I love it. This Thanks. Is amazing.
Well, anyway, this is a spooky, ghouly, a true crime sometimes podcast. So for those of you who are new, welcome. Hello, welcome. We're so glad that you're here with us.
Yeah.
And those of you that keep returning.
Thanks.
Thank you. From the bottom of our hearts.
Yeah.
Because.
It's been so long.
It's been a long time. Here.
It's been a long day. It's all. Been like 3 months. 2 months. 3 months.
I know. That's a long. But we kind of kept it going. Sorry we had to skip a week.
Sorry, but not sorry.
Sorry, not sorry, because sometimes you girls need a break. Listen, we're not paid for this shit.
Yeah.
So, you know.
We're almost at 2,000 listens.
I know. I actually thought that we were at more than that. But that's fine.
Well,
2,000 is amazing.
Yeah.
And I think once we get back to like once a week.
Mm-hmm. And my TikTok.
And, yeah.
I think I have, like, 30 followers on
what?
TikTok.
What? Okay. Mm-hmm. That's really cool, actually.
My last TikTok has almost 500 views.
Wow.
Yeah, it's the most on any of the ones that I've made so far.
And that was the day in the life?
No.
Oh.
What? Where have you been?
I don't have TikTok.
I've made, like... 8 TikToks.
What? Oh, Sarah out here doing the work.
Yeah, I'm doing all the social.
I don't have TikTok. So, I don't know. Sometimes Sarah sends me TikToks, and I just have to watch them, like, in a web browser.
Yeah.
And then it's like, you need to log in, and I'm like, I can't. I remember getting TikTok once for, like, 5 seconds. And then I was like, I don't want this.
Yeah.
Because I knew it would just be infinite doom scrolling forever.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I'll show you all my TikToks after.
Okay.
Oh, also, I've been posting on my personal TikTok as well.
Oh.
To try to draw people to...
Oh,
it's ghoul.societypod. But we have 21 followers.
Yay!
There
Thank
is...
Thank you, 21
Thank
peeps.
You, everybody. There's this TikTok page I follow... And they're called Seven Sins Paranormal.
Ooh.
And it's just a bunch of ghost hunters in Victoria, Australia.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and they just, like, post, like, them. How do you cope with stress? Me, ghost hunting. And they're just, like, so iconic.
That's awesome.
Yeah, but anyway, I just thought I'd shout them out.
Beautiful.
But yeah, I'll show you. Actually, one of them I'm really proud of. So... Okay. I'll show you later.
I'm excited to
see. Yeah, everybody go follow me on TikTok.
What have you been watching these days? Any recommendations?
Well, I'm a bit behind on the time, but Montana and I watched the documentary. Sorry, I have to Google it.
Is it about the Titan submersible?
No.
Oh, because I watched that one. Decently recently.
Oh, Amy Lynn Bradley's Amy Bradley is missing.
Whoa.
It's a docuseries about Amy Lynn Bradley who went missing on a cruise ship.
Oh, shit.
And her story, along with so many others that have gone missing on cruise ships, is why I will never go on one. Because how can you... She went missing when, like, they were in the middle of the ocean.
She just fell off.
I don't think it's that complicated.
But people have seen her.
In real life? Like, since then?
Yes. Oh. Like, years later, they've seen her.
Well, maybe she just wanted to restart her life.
Well, most people think that she either fell overboard or she was smuggled off the ship.
Yeah, true. Like sex trafficking.
Oh, fuck. Yeah, because there are a couple people who claim to have seen her and, like, actually spoken with her. And she's been like, I can't leave. My name is Amy Lynn Bradley, and
that's so sad. Yeah, that's really sad.
Yeah, so that's why I will not. Jamie's setting up my tripod. That's why I will not go on cruise ships, because they're just so big. And you know, I was talking to someone, and they're like, "No, cruises are fun because." There's sometimes when you're on the ship and you're in an area of the ship and there's no one else around. And I was like, yeah, isn't that like kind of terrifying?
You're like, you're not understanding what my fear is. It's not being around lots of people. It's the opposite.
You're telling me that you can be on this giant ass cruise ship with like
a thousand people or more.
And there's sometimes where you're alone and that doesn't freak you out. There's not an infinite a space that you can go to on these ships.
No, it's true. I think that, like, I would probably just get seasick. So I'm kind of not interested.
Oh.
And I'm also not interested. Like, okay, I appreciate and respect the ocean.
Yeah.
I'm not interested in, like, being on it or in it for extended periods of time.
Yeah.
Too crazy. Like, how I just learned that the Red Sea has a lake at the bottom of it, and how the Mariana Trench is 11 kilometers deep at its deepest point, and that there's, like, shit down there that we don't even know about at all, and none of the ocean is explored, and we know, like, more about Mars.
Yeah, I know.
Like, that shit? No way. Yeah. Too existential for me.
Yeah.
But I love it. Mm-hmm. I'll watch it. Will I ever go in, like, a submersible? No. On a cruise ship? Probably not.
Yeah.
Just not very interested.
Yeah. But anyway, so that, there's also this documentary, this docuseries about, like, young kids and, social media and, like, TikTok and YouTube. And it follows this, like, one girl and... Her and her mom, like, started this YouTube channel, and then they kind of started, like, a group. Like, you know how sometimes there's, like, these TikTok houses or these YouTube houses?
Yes. Yeah,
so they, like, started that, but for kids.
Ugh.
But then, like, a bunch of creepy shit started happening.
Yeah, of course.
But, like, the girl that this surrounds... And her mom, like, declined to be on the documentary. And it's just, like, all these other kids who were affected by them, by the mom.
That's so fucked up.
Yeah, and how, like, there's no laws around it. Like, you know how with films and TVs, there's laws that children actors can only work for a certain amount of time. They have to have an adult on site. They have to have, like, a certain amount of hours for school every day. Mm-hmm. And that's just not the case for YouTube.
That's wild.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah. I feel so like it's just like the dark side of kid influencers.
Maybe laws will come into effect one day, but maybe not in the way that the states is right now.
Yeah, right.
Because, yeah. Also, I was like making a weird face when you were talking because did you hear the mic interference?
Mm-mm.
Oh, maybe it's just on my end. It was like, beep, beep, beep. And I was like,
is there spirit in here?
And then I felt sick. Oh my God. I didn't tell you. Oh my God. 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 Okay.
Did you see a ghost?
No, but I.
What happened?
Was with my best friend and her partner. And I went into. We all went into Vintage After Death.
Okay.
Which is above that little, like, scary. You know that basement place?
Yeah.
In Market Square?
Yeah.
So. Are you listening or are you on your watch?
I'm listening. It's not on video.
Oh, here. Just ask me.
Thing. Okay, yeah.
Okay, so.
I want your story on both modes.
So we go into Vintage After Death.
Mm-hmm.
And I go immediately. I turn right. Because we go in the back door.
Yeah.
Boop. Turn right. I'm looking at the sales rack. All of a sudden, I get the craziest feeling of vertigo and like sick, like I'm going to puke immediately mm-hmm. that I've ever experienced.
Whoa.
It was like when we were in the change room.
Yeah.
At Flavor.
Yeah.
And we got that wave.
Yeah.
It was that, but like 10 times worse. And I was like, turned to Allison. I was like, I just got so dizzy and so sick. I'm like, I need to sit down like right now. And so I'm sitting down and I'm still feeling it.
Yeah.
And then I started getting like dissociated, but it didn't go away until we left Vintage After Death. And we were in there for like not a super long time, maybe like 15 minutes or something. But it was like long enough where I was like, one, how do people work in here? And then Allison started feeling it too. And then Allison's partner was like, maybe there's a ghost. I was like, yeah. Like literally. So that was my ghosty, spooky. And that's the thing.
And
is
you
like,
felt okay when you, like after you had left, did it dissipate?
Yeah.
Like rapidly?
Pretty quick.
Whoa.
I would say within like 2 minutes.
Yeah.
I was fine.
It was so crazy.
It was so, it's so weird because it's like, why? Like, I'm trying to explain it away and I'm trying to understand, like, why am I feeling these things? And, like, there must be a reason for it. You know, like, your brain is like, there must be a reason. But, like, it's, I also do believe that it's just spirits. But I think when I'm with other people, I want to be like, oh, no, it's this or this or this.
Yeah.
Yeah, for fear of, like, I don't know, judgment maybe, which is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
I'll unpack that later. But, yeah, I'm like, okay, just, like, got attacked by some spirits. Not attacked, because it wasn't like...
Maybe they're just saying hello.
Yeah. Next time, maybe don't make just, me maybe, sick, though, but...
Yeah. Well, maybe they were just... Maybe it's like a residual thing.
Yeah.
And it's just like the energy is there. Residual energy is there in it. Maybe something, I don't know, moved through you or something.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Or used your energy.
And it's above... Yeah, it's above that really spooky, haunted downstairs area that has had, like, a dance studio and, like, other things in it. And no one stays in there because it's too intense.
Yeah, that's where the haunted walk walks are hosted out of.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, that was crazy. Also, the last thing I want to say before we begin the story is it's almost spooky season, bitches.
Woo!
Buckle up.
No, like it is spooky season though because PSLs are back. So that
okay. Means- That's so funny because the other day I was like talking to some friends and I was like, yes, it's pumpkin spice time. It's fall. And they were like, oh my God. So
no, it
stupid.
Is though because that is back and also Bath and Body Works is having their, if you know, you know, they're having their 3-wick candle sale. So each candle is $15.
Whoa.
So I went yesterday with my girlfriends.
Nice.
And I got my sweater weather candle because that's my favorite one
Love.
Of their collection. That one and the pumpkin apple one or cinnamon apple. That one's really good.
Mm-hmm.
They had one last year called Fall Forest.
Ooh.
And that one is, I think, maybe my favorite. They didn't have it this year.
Probably sold out.
Or no, they like just they just it. Didn't, they don't have it
no.
again. And I'm so devastated because it was so good.
That's so annoying.
But as long as they have sweater weather, I will buy that one because it has like eucalyptus. It's a little bit lighter.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
Because yeah, I don't really... like strong. It's weird. I don't like strong scents, but I do like incense, but I don't really like candles, like flavored candles.
Yeah.
Because it's too much.
Yeah.
Also, I did, like, feel it in the air the other day.
Crisper.
I, like, went outside.
It's crispy.
It's crispy. Yeah.
It's crispy
out
there.
It was crazy because when I was up north, I felt this already. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm here and I'm experiencing, like, the beginning again. But then the north also had, like, a warm streak, too. So.
Yeah.
Anyways. Well, I'm going to share a story with you.
Okay, I'm ready. We missed your stories.
Aww. Okay, this one.
Uh-oh.
Trigger it's not warning. That crazy.
Oh.
No, no, no. It's really actually not that crazy. But I was like, this story is well known and it needs to be told and it's local. And I was like, I'm just feeling like this is making sense for some reason. I don't know why. Okay. Maybe it'll be understood later. But yeah. Have you ever looked to the Parliament building and thought to yourself, who designed this motherfucker?
Oh, this guy? You're going to talk about this guy?
Well, let me get into it. But, you know, I have troubles with Parliament, obviously, because everything it resembles is kind of antithetical to my own beliefs, especially on Turtle Island. But if we remove ourselves for a moment from its governments and legislations and solely focus on the architecture of the building, mm-hmm. we are going to talk about this guy.
This guy.
I also know that the ledge, the Parliament. So sometimes I'm going to say the ledge because that's like what the locals call it. Sometimes I'll refer to Parliament, but it's the Parliament building that's in downtown Victoria, quote unquote, BC, quote unquote. And it's like the main government house for all of BC.
Yeah, because
it's a capital city.
Yeah.
So crazy. Wait, isn't that so crazy?
Yeah. I don't know why they just didn't pick Vancouver. How do you pick a capital city? Because they should just revote.
I think
everyone thinks Vancouver already is the capital city.
I know, because it's a bigger one.
Yeah.
I don't know what that was.
Is that upstairs?
Maybe. Also, the window is open, but anyway. So I know that this building brings a lot of tourism into Vic, mm-hmm. which is good and bad. But we're not going to get into that right now. So this 500-foot-long building officially began operating in 1898 and has an andesite facade. And andesite is a volcanic type of rock, mm-hmm. along with white marble, a large central dome, and two end pavilions. Ooh. The style combines Baroque rigorous symmetry, sculptural massing, and rusticated surfaces of the then popular Renaissance style. So essentially, it kind of looks like a castle, but not like a castle.
Yeah.
It's and true. And the copper on the tops of mm-hmm. the domes, mm-hmm. for those who don't know, it was made with copper, and then over time, obviously, it has turned green. Mm-hmm, so the domes are green.
As copper does, yes. as it oxidizes and that's stuff. Right.
Which must be purposeful.
You think?
Yeah, I think so. They gotta know.
I mean, yeah, but why do you think all government buildings have that?
Because
it's also prevalent in Europe as well.
Right.
Do you think it's just because there was a lot of copper ore?
Maybe. Copper's so cheaper. Shiny. It's shiny and then it turns green. It turns a hospital green. It's so weird.
Yeah, but did they know that it was going to turn green?
I feel like yes. Probably could have looked it up, but...
I don't know.
Okay, I'm just going to close the window.
Yeah, we can hear people. I think I need a tripod.
Yeah.
So that I can be a real TikToker. What's up, you guys?
What's up, guys? It's Sam and Colby.
What's up, you guys?
What's up, you guys? It's Jamie and Sarah. Oh my god. Okay, once all was said and done, the building exceeded the budget by $500,000, with the final cost being $923,000. So it cost over 100% more than what they thought it was going to.
Why didn't they just make it smaller?
Good question.
Cut costs, make it smaller, guys.
You know what they say in construction, double the time and triple the cost.
Is that what they say?
Yeah, that's what they say.
Okay.
But do you want to guess 1898 money of $923?
Oh, that was that.
Oh. Yes.
Oh. 2.5 million.
Wait, you guessed 2.5 million?
Yeah.
It's 2.4 million.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Wow, good job.
That's like the closest we've ever gotten, I think.
Yeah. You know what's crazy though, when you think about it, like these days, mm-hmm. that's not even that much money.
I know.
Like properties in Vic cost $2.5 million.
Yeah, I was just like, a measly $2.5 million.
Yeah, easy peasy. Anyway, so you might be thinking to yourself, Jamie, why are you droning on about the Parliament building?
Yeah.
Well, shut up. Well, did you know, Sarah?
Who fucking cares?
That the architect of this building designed it because he actually had won a competition?
Yes.
Oh. So this architect, his name is Francis? Oh, yeah. I guess I never said it out loud when I was making the story, and I was like, that's wrong. No, that's right. Francis Mawson Rattenbury. And he has a very interesting story to share.
Yeah, he does.
Rattenbury was born October 11th, 1867. So, you know, he was a bit of a gloomy, spooky babe at birth already.
Hopefully.
He was actually born in Leeds, England, where he began his architectural career with an apprenticeship in 1884 to the, quote, Lockwood and Mawson Company, end quote, in England. His parents were John Owen Rattenbury, a merchant and later an artist, and Mary Ann Mawson, who was probably a full-time mom, amongst many other jobs that I couldn't find any record of course, because the patriarchy.
Classic patriarchy strikes again.
This apprenticeship he did was actually under his uncle's firm, so I'm sensing nepotism right off the bat here. And when Rattenbury turned 25, he was like, see ya, and he sailed across the ocean to Canada, arriving in Vancouver, BC in 1891. Mm-hmm. Now I want to get into more of like the deeper history, which is why I didn't like hit it right off the bat of pre-contact history. But at this time, Vancouver's settler population was around 13,000 to 19,000 people, with its economy being driven by sawmills and the Canadian Pacific Railway and British and American capital funding its growth. So, which is crazy. Like, I didn't know that America funded Vancouver.
Freaking America. They're everywhere.
Yeah. And also by this time, the original inhabitants of this area, namely the Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Musqueam, had been strategically and violently dispossessed and displaced of their lands, and thus their cultures, traditions, ceremonies, food sources, and families, which extend to non-human families. I found a small anecdote that encapsulates some of this displacement, and it goes as follows. One morning in 1887, in a Squamish village immediately west of Vancouver called Tsleil-Waututh, today, which is part of Stanley Park, a family was eating breakfast when they were startled by the heavy thump of an axe hitting wood, and then another chop, and then another, and the house shook. The family rushed outside to find a couple of men chopping at the corner of their home.
What the fuck?
Recounting the moment years later, August Jack Catsalano, a famous Squamish chief who was only a boy at the time, remembered his sister Louise asking them what they were doing. We're surveying the road, one responded. Whose road? Asked Louise. Is it white man's? So this anecdote is tied to the creation of Stanley Park in 1887, which led to the removal of longtime Indigenous residents, the demolishment of homes, the empty promises of compensation, and in an ironic twist, admits attempts to erase Indigenous history and continue the lie of the, quote, dead Indian, as coined by Thomas King in his book In the Inconvenient Indian from 2012. Totem poles were erected in Stanley Park to represent cultural resilience. So they tear down their houses and they kick them out, and then they say, let's put these totem poles up and show their cultural resilience.
That's the most Canada thing I've ever heard.
I know. Fucked up. So this is what's happening as Rattenbury is coming to Vancouver. So just wanted to paint that picture for Vancouver. Needless to say, amongst all of this, 1891 Vancouver was a time of growth and prosperity only for those who are privileged to profit, financially or otherwise, off those who have been displaced and dispossessed. So Rattenbury is living La Vida Loca in 1891 on stolen lands when he enters an architectural competition to build the new ledge building in Vic. He wins, and we end up with the Romanesque Parliament building you see today. This win garners Rattenbury more success over the following years,
and he went on to design other well-known buildings, such as the Empress Hotel in Vic in 1908, mm-hmm. while he was working for the CPR as their architect.
Mm-hmm.
However, when this relationship fell through, he joined their competition, the Grand Trunk Pacific Railway, and designed many hotels and stations for the GTP.
Mm-hmm.
In a strange connection to one of my favorite stories, these buildings were never completed because the president of the GTP, Charles Melville Hayes, died in the sinking of the RMS Titanic. I love a good crossover.
Full circle.
So then he's like, fuck, okay. And he like goes to the CPR and he's like, can you please take me back? And so they do.
Can I have my old job back? Can I have
my old job back, please? Because please. Charles died in the RMS Titanic.
Oh, no. That really sucks for him. Guess you need a new architect.
Yeah.
Remember me?
Remember me? A few other buildings you know that Rattenbury designed are as follows. The Crystal Gardens. Do you know the Crystal Gardens?
No.
It's down by the old spaghetti factory. It's not what you think. I'm going to show you a picture now.
Can you just go in it? Oh. Why do I kind of want to go to the old spaghetti factory?
I know.
Like, I kind of want to go to dinner there.
This is it.
Oh, wait. I have to put my glasses back on.
This is it. It's this building. It's nothing really that special.
Yeah.
But you've been inside because I think we went to a market in there before. And it used to have a pool in the center, but now...
I've never been in there.
I don't think...
I've been in the conference center across the street.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
Oh.
That's where I got my COVID shot.
Oh, nice. Yeah, so the Crystal Gardens, it used to be like this.
It used to just be a pool?
Fucking cool. Yeah.
Oh, like a public pool?
I don't really know, actually.
Or was it maybe like
someone
like
can tell us.
The Empress?
Maybe.
Affiliated?
I actually don't really understand the Crystal Gardens, or Crystal Garden.
Now just an atrium?
Yeah.
What happens in there? Can you just go in there and eat and hang out?
I don't know if it's just open. Like, usually they have things there.
Events.
Yeah. Okay. Like markets and stuff.
Oh,
and it's not that impressive. I don't know. Maybe we should go to the Old Spaghetti Factory and then check it out.
We should go to the Old Spaghetti Factory because it's haunted.
It is haunted. Well, because it's in the Crystal Garden, essentially. Anyway, so the Crystal Garden and the CPR Steamship Terminal in Victoria. Do you know it?
It's kind of like... Where is that?
I know, okay. When I was doing all this research, I was like, wait, what?
That's
but
still
I think
standing?
It's kind of behind... Wait.
What?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah. You know it. It's on the harbor.
Oh, that's where the shippies go now.
Yeah.
That used to be the train station?
Yeah, girl.
Can you go in there?
I think so. Yeah.
How come I've never known this?
Or no, sorry, sir. It wasn't a train station. It was owned by Canadian Pacific Railway, but it was a steamship terminal, like a ferry terminal, which is... It's not quite that still, but it's, like, in the same area.
Right.
Like, choo-choo, steamship, choo-choo.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Anyways, so he made those with another architect named Percy James. He also did the Vancouver Art Gallery, the Nanaimo mm-hmm. Courthouse, the Bank of Montreal, Victoria, which is now the Irish Times pub.
Slay.
The Merchants.
I love Irish Times. Okay, wait. Side note?
Okay.
If someone from Irish Times ever listens to this, bring back the chicken pot pie. I'm pissed off, man. I'm so fucking mad that you got rid of the chicken pot pie. I don't care that it's difficult to make. It was so good, and I only had it once. I only got to have it once because the last time I went there, I didn't even look at the menu. I just said, I'll have the chicken pot pie, and she was like, great. She comes back a few minutes later. I'm so sorry. We don't have that anymore. She was like, the menu changed today. I was like,
holy shit.
They got
shit.
Rid of it because it was too difficult to make.
Wow. This is why efficiency is violence.
Also, it's like, it's not that difficult because it's just pot pie filling in a bowl and then pastry on top.
Oh, they don't even have a pastry underneath the filling?
Mm-mm. That's how most pubs do pot pies.
Wow. Okay.
Anyway, so I'm pissed off.
They're being lazy.
Bring it back.
Crazy. Yeah, bring back chicken pot pie. Anywho.
Wrapped over.
He also designed the Merchants Bank in Nanaimo, which is now the Vault Cafe. Have you been there?
No.
It's really cool.
Oh.
And it makes sense that it used to be a bank. And it's, when I went upstairs in there, there was ghosts for sure. Spirits. Sorry. Yes.
Damn.
Yes. And he also designed the original Victoria High School, which was originally on Fort Street and was demolished in 1953.
Where on Fort Street?
I don't know.
Do you want me to look it up?
Sure.
Also, how come they've spent like $2 billion on the Victoria High School in Fernwood? Like, that's actually bonkers how much they've spent on that.
Yeah. I don't know what to tell you about that. They gotta do what they gotta do, baby. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know, because I can't find a picture of it.
It's okay.
But holy fuck, look at this picture of Fort Street in the 1800s.
Whoa, talk about Western.
I know. Crazy.
That literally looks like a still from Red Dead Redemption 2, the video
game. Yeah, true.
If you know, you know.
If you know, you know. Icky yuck. Okay, if anyone... Well, okay, we need to go to the freaking archives. You know, the Oak Bay archives? We need to go there.
We can go there?
Yeah.
Okay.
And we need to... So, back to the story. Mm-hmm. Victoria at this time was going through similar violent changes as Vancouver was. Mm-hmm. And I think Rattenbury actually lived in Victoria as he was designing new buildings. Mm-hmm. I didn't see like where he switched over or when, but I think that he was in Vic. So while Vancouver was seen as the industrial hub, Victoria was actually cultivated as a, quote, cultured, civilized English town, end quote. As we know here on Ghoul Society, this was only possible through the dispossession and extreme exploitation of indigenous peoples and their lands, mm-hmm. namely the Lekwungen, Wasanich, Songhees, and Esquimalt First Nations. Mm-hmm. In 1911, after 50 years of negotiations, the Songhees peoples surrendered their reserve, which was down by the Johnson Street Bridge. Mm-hmm. And was then pushed further into modern-day Esquimalt area.
Yeah.
I want to be clear here that this surrender came after 50 years of resistance and claiming responsibility over their lands, mm-hmm. as their economy and way of life was dependent upon available resources at specific times of the year, and their lifestyle was extremely migratory. Mm-hmm. So this wasn't like a quick sale or like an easy negotiation.
No.
It took so many, many, many years of them being like, no, we don't want to give this up.
Yeah.
And then I think push came to shove and they eventually didn't have a choice, unfortunately.
Right. I guess like at some point they had to do what was overall best.
Yeah.
Best for them to continue.
Yeah. Yeah.
Their way of life, which is just awful.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah. Well, and I think, like, what would have been best for them to continue their way of life would be to be, like, fuck off.
Yeah, but then they would have been, just murdered.
Yes, exactly. They would have been met with, like, intense violence.
Yeah.
So, yeah. As construction of settler buildings became more frequent, along with the introduction of alcohol and disease, the Songhees continued to be negotiated with and thus pushed further and further away from their traditional lands. Mm-hmm. All of this, as we know, is part of the colonization plan so that the crown could claim the land as their own and settlers could keep moving in to build up industrialization and the European capitalist economy. There's a pretty decent thesis written in 1974 titled The Negotiations to Relocate the Songhees Indians, 1843 to 1911, but I'll say it's obviously outdated. Even in the title, you can tell it's outdated. And I'm pretty sure it's written by a white woman. So if you read it, take it with a grain of salt. Mm-hmm. But I found it to be like, I didn't read the entire thing, but there was some pretty like, I think decent information in it. Of course, these things are best learned from the community in which things were enacted upon. But I also recognize it's not always easy or possible and that we can't just rely on other people to teach us.
Yeah.
We need to teach ourselves. Anyways, I just wanted to share all of that because this is part of the context in which Rattenbury was designing these buildings around, yeah, quote, Victoria.
Mm-hmm.
So, where am I going with all of this? Da-da-da. A few years after winning the competition to design the ledge, he actually lost a competition to build the Saskatchewan ledge, and this is where things go downhill for him.
Uh-oh.
Rattenbury didn't have formal training in architecture. No. Remember, he just worked with his uncle, mm-hmm, his unky. And with increasing professionalism in the field, he was very quickly outpaced by more educated architects.
Mm-hmm.
He was also involved with a bunch of financial ventures that didn't work out. Simultaneously, his personal life began to crumble.
Here we go, guys. No, hold on to your butts.
Okay, wait. Before I get into that, I do want to say, like, I don't think that you need to be educated to know how to learn things in the world. Mm-hmm. Even within architecture, like, I don't think you need those things. And learning from family is an extremely valid way of learning, mm-hmm, and teaching. And that's, like, the way in different cultures, apart from Western cultures, all the time. But the issue is that, like, other people are getting educated and kind of taking over those jobs,
yeah,
because the workforce is focused on professionalism. So it's, like, yeah, a system problem, not necessarily a Rattenbury problem.
Yeah, and it's still like that.
Yes.
Like, trying to find, like, trying to get a job without a freaking degree. Good luck.
But then also a degree doesn't even get you a job.
No, it doesn't.
So there's literally no winning.
It's like, oh, do you have a master's? No. Okay, bye.
Yeah.
What do you mean? I have an undergrad. Is that not good enough for you?
Nope, good enough.
Like, it's absolutely insane. It's crazy.
So Rattenbury was married to Florence Eleanor Nunn in 1898, and they had two children together named Frank and Mary. 25 years later, in 1923, Rattenbury left Florence for the 27-year-old, twice married, which was very scandalous at the time,
whoa,
Alma Pakenham. Former clients and associates actually shunned Rattenbury as he, mm-hmm, had the heating and lighting turned off in Florence's home, and he publicly flaunted his affair with Alma.
Whoa.
I know, kind of fucked up. That's this resulted crazy in the couple moving away from Victoria. However, 2 years later, in 1925, Rattenbury married Alma once Florence signed the divorce papers, and the couple moved back with Alma's son, Christopher.
Damn, dude, poor Florence, because she probably couldn't get married after that.
Yeah, I know, right?
Because
hopefully she did, because yeah, Alma did.
Yeah, but he didn't. Third. But he didn't care.
Yeah, true.
Like, society, you know, other mainstream men thought was, oh, you're tainted now.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, that's a good point. At this time, they had their own son together named John, and then they decided to move to Bournemouth, England in 1929. So, mm-hmm, they tried it out in Victoria for 4 years. They were like, nope. And then later that year, his ex-wife Florence actually passed away.
Oh, sad.
Yeah. So let's talk about Alma a little bit. Alma was born as Alma Victoria Wolfe in 1897 in Prince Rupert, BC. Prince Rupert is located on the traditional and unceded stolen territories of the Coast Tsimshian peoples, and it also includes the Nisga, Gixan, Haisla, and Haida peoples as well. She, Alma, was a gifted musician from a young age, and was part of the Toronto Symphony Orchestra.
Whoa.
Though I don't know how, because she wasn't in Toronto.
Also, she was a woman.
But maybe she was moved around.
That's pretty crazy.
She was a kid when she was. Or maybe there was like
a
like West Coast version.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm a little confused. The details are blurry.
Yeah.
It was over 100 years ago. Don't know. In 1914, when Alma was 17 years old, she married Caledon Robert John Radcliffe Dalling. Too many names.
Yeah.
Caledon served in World War I and was stationed in Prince Rupert, where Alma was working to entertain the troops with her musical abilities.
Oh, wow.
In 1915, the couple moved to England, and Alma continued to work at the War Office.
Mm-hmm.
A year later, Caledon was killed in action.
Oh.
And ever the patriot, and now dealing with grief, Alma volunteered with the Scottish Women's Hospital, which was part of the French Red Cross within France. She was awarded with the French Croix degree for her war service.
Wow.
I probably said that wrong. Sorry, not sorry. After having been wounded twice.
Whoa.
She's kind of a badass, but yeah. Then she becomes kind of not a badass.
Ugh, Alma.
Post-war in 1918, she began an affair with married Compton Pakenham, who divorced his wife 2 years later in 1920. The couple then emigrated to the United States. Pakenham was employed as a lecturer by claiming he held a doctorate, even though he didn't.
Oh my God.
And Alma worked as a piano teacher. In 1921, they officially married and had a son, Christopher. And that's who she brought back when she ended up with Rattenbury.
Right.
And somehow within this year, the relationship failed. And in 1922, she took her son and returned to Canada, formally divorcing Compton in 1925 to marry Rattenbury.
Wow.
Very confusing, very messy. It's okay if no one followed any of that. It's just some backstory.
I got it.
Cool. Back to Bournemouth. They've got a son. They freshly moved to England. And on top of this, Francis has retired now at age 60. So he's 60 and she is 31.
Oh, okay.
So just a little tiny age gap. No big deal. No big deal. 3 decades? No big deal. Totally fine.
It's fine.
It's fine. Whatever. It's fine. Everything's fine. Word through the grapevine was that they didn't have an unhappy marriage, but it wasn't entirely happy either. They occasionally fought about money, and Francis would give his wife about £1,000. I don't know if this was a year, every year. I think it was every year. To cover all the household expenses, including bills, clothing, food, and alcohol. And Francis was a heavy drinker of whiskey. And education for John. I know you're giving me that face, but £1,000 in 1928. Do you want to guess how much that is?
£10,000.
£80,282.
Oh, shit.
And you want to know how much that is in Canadian dollars?
$120,000. Buy.
$150,000.
Okay, yeah.
So.
Okay. So that's a lot of money.
Sounds like enough money to me.
Why is she so upset?
Girl, why are you so upset?
Because he's just drinking it away.
Maybe. And like, maybe they're living beyond their means.
Clearly. Because you're giving them. That's a lot of money.
It's so much money.
That's a lot of money.
I know. I'm trying to do the quick math of like how much money that's like, how much money is that every month? Like $15,000?
Almost, I think.
And Sarah's doing the quick math here. Do, do, do.
$12,500 a month.
Girl.
You gotta be fucking kidding me, dude. That is so much money.
Yeah, like, come on.
I would die if I had that much money a month.
Okay, but maybe they had, like, a house that was, like, in those times, like, say, our version of those times, like, $8,000 a month.
Yeah.
And now you only have, like, $4,000 to pay for your kid, your alcoholic husband, food, clothing. Yeah. I mean, you shouldn't be buying new clothing every month anyway. Anyways, whatever.
Oh, boy.
Sounds like she couldn't make it work.
That is devastating.
Yeah. According to the gossip of the time, they lived a celibate life with separate bedrooms on separate floors of their home after the birth of their son. Now, to me, this doesn't necessarily mean anything because you can kind of decide to make your relationship whatever you want it to be.
Yeah.
And also at that time, couples often slept separately. But let's just go with the idea that things were not like amazing between them. Additionally, now this one is weird. There was an incident where Rattenbury gave Alma a black eye in June 1934.
Oh.
Apparently because of his depressive episodes in which he would threaten suicide. This also doesn't make sense to me. Like, do you punch your wife when you're depressed? Or was she trying to prevent him from doing something
and
accidentally got knocked in the eye?
Right.
Don't know.
Who? No, they only know.
They only know. And now no one knows.
Yeah.
The same year, in 1934, they put an ad in the paper looking... Okay, also, though, like, you have no money and you're putting an ad in the paper. Sorry, this just hit me. You're like, I don't have enough money. They put an ad in the paper looking for a teenage male live-in servant.
Ew. Why teenage? Ew. Why teenage?
Gotta be young and strong. Young and strong. The times were different. This was not even 100 years ago. This was 90 years ago. Okay. This was answered by George Stoner. He was born in 1916. Who they employed as a chauffeur and a handyman.
Okay.
He was 17 years old. So by November 1934, he was 18.
Mm-hmm.
So legally, he was a consenting adult. And at some point, Stoner and Alma began, you guessed it, an affair.
Yeah, I thought that's what would happen. That's why I said teenage. Excuse.
Yeah.
At least he was 18.
I guess. Apparently, Rattenbury was aware of this and he tolerated it. There's like a French word for this when your husband knows and it's just like fine and it's just part of your relationship and your life. So like, cool.
Yeah.
They're living it. They're like, awesome, whatever. But I think by this point, Alma is in her 40s and no 40-year-old woman should ever be sleeping with an 18-year-old boy because that's called grooming.
Yeah.
So, no. I don't care. I know it's like legally it's okay, but like
it's weird.
It's not okay because there's a power dynamic and there's all this shit. Like
also, she's his employer.
Yes. So that's double also,
power dynamic.
Yeah. And also, like, your brain is not developed at 18.
Yeah.
It's not developed till you're over 25 years old.
Yeah.
Especially as a male.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, so boy. He's living with them. Everything's going fine. They're having their affair. Everything's great. But in the early hours of March 23rd, 1935, so a year later,
mm-hmm.
not even a year because mm-hmm. this was like, it was November 1934 and now it's March. Alma called their local doctor in hysterics. He came by the house as quickly as he could, and Alma brought him to Rattenbury, who was found lying on his bed in the downstairs bedroom with a blood-soaked sheet wrapped around his head. At first glance, the doctor assumed that Rattenbury somehow hit his head on the grand piano close by. Okay. However, he had no pants on. I don't know why. Well, maybe he was just chilling without pants. Okay. And he was unconscious, but he was still alive. His blood was covered all over the armchair and the carpet, and later it was discovered that he had been struck multiple times in the head with a wooden carpenter's hammer. The blows were violent enough to remove the back of his skull and cause his false teeth to fall out.
Wait, how old is he at this time?
60.
Oh, he's still 60. Okay.
Or
61.
Yeah, maybe a bit older.
63.
Yeah,
probably.
Maybe even 70.
Oh, okay.
I guess, because if...
It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a little bit of time. You know what? Someone do the math. It's fine. Somewhere between 60 and 70 years old. This was unknown by the doctor in the moment, though he called in a surgeon who called an ambulance to transfer Rattenbury to a nursing home. And then this is where they had shaved his head and found his injuries, confirming foul play, contrary to the assumption made earlier by the doctor.
Right.
4 days later, Rattenbury died from his injuries.
Yeah.
Back at the scene, Alma was, quote, highly excited, incoherent, and intoxicated, end quote. And when the police later arrived, she declared that she was the one who attacked her husband with a mallet. She had to be sedated by the local doctor, who would return to Villa Madeira at 4 a.m. with, quote, half a grain of morphia. End quote. Following morning, Alma was taken to the police station where she stated, "That is right. I did it deliberately and would do it again."
Okay, girl.
She was charged with grievous bodily harm with intent to murder. She later stated that she had no recollection of that night and could not remember signing a confession.
Oh.
Quietly and secretly, George, the 18-year-old chauffeur, admitted to the housekeeper that he had actually been the one to carry out the deed. Both Alma and George were charged and sent to prison. While in prison, Alma's eldest son, Christopher, visited her.
It's unknown exactly what was shared, but after this, Alma decided to recant her confession. The trial began on May 27th, 1935, at the Old Bailey.
What?
With a line out the door of people trying to get a seat.
Yeah, I bet.
There are photos from this time. I found, like, all these photos.
Whoa.
They're great. I'll show you them.
Great. After. We'll put them on our Instagram.
Yeah. Except they have the Getty Images watermark, but it's whatever. It's fine. It's fine. It was heavily covered in the press and was the hot goss of the town.
Yeah.
Both Alma and George entered not guilty pleas, but the jury acquitted Alma and convicted George,
damn,
who was sentenced to death with a recommendation for mercy from the jury.
Oh, wow. Okay.
There was like, I know. I don't know how. There was like some quotes about how like, at first it seemed like Alma was a killer, but then through her trial, it was obvious that she didn't do it. And like, but George, blah, 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 like all this stuff and yada, yada, whatever.
Yeah, but so then the jury convicted him of first degree murder. And then the penalty for that is just automatically death.
Death, yeah.
But that, okay. Because I was like, why would they convict him to death and then say, well, he should, mercy.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
I know.
I get it now, though.
Yeah. I think the judge sentenced him and the jury was like,
maybe just let him die in prison.
Yeah. So a week later, after George was sentenced, on June 4th, Alma bought a knife, traveled to Bournemouth, and on the bank of the River Avon, she stabbed herself in the chest 6 times.
Oh.
With 3 of those penetrating her heart.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
She left a note stating, if I only thought it would help Stoner, that's George.
Yeah.
I would stay, but it has been pointed out too vividly that I cannot help him. And that is my death sentence.
6 times to do that to yourself?
I know. I know.
How do you do it after the first one?
The third, the fourth, the fifth.
I'd like, how do you, oh my God. That's, I know, so devastating.
In a terrible twist of fate, 300,000 people signed a petition to commute George's sentence to life imprisonment, and it was accepted.
Mm-hmm.
He was no longer on death's doorstep. And he only served 7 years in prison,
whoa,
before being released to serve for the Brits in World War II. Afterward, he returned to the Bournemouth area,
wow,
and got married.
Wow.
So she killed herself for nothing.
Wow.
Yeah, that's really sad. Really sad.
Wow, that's crazy.
In 1987... he broke his silence about the case after a play about the murder was shown on TV.
Oh.
He said, quote, it was so long ago and there was no other person to witness the actual event. The whole crime was committed on an emotional basis. Both I and the lady involved were in a highly emotional state. Our emotions were completely out of control, end quote. So George says that he had been accepted in Bournemouth, saying, quote, I have lived here all my life and no one has ever said they were disgusted. They have always sympathized and I have admitted I had made a mistake.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Turns out, however, George was kind of a shitty dude.
I was going to say, obviously, you know, he turned it around. That is what...
He turned it around.
That is what...
But...
So, like, yeah, he got sent to war, but that is what rehabilitation is supposed to be.
Yeah.
And now he's gonna fuck it up.
Yeah, because in 1990, he was placed on probation for the indecent assault of a 12-year-old boy,
stop,
in a bathroom in Bournemouth.
Oh my God.
He died in Christchurch in 2000.
George. Wait, how old was this guy?
I know.
Holy shit.
I know. Well, he was born in 1916, so he was 84.
Somehow that math doesn't compute in my brain.
I know. Because 1916 is a 2000? World different.
Yeah.
It's like crazy world different. Because like the changes of the world were like, vroom, you know? Like, yeah. So crazy.
Wow. That's insane.
Now, it's a shame that Rattenberry's death gets so overshadowed by the chaos that ensues post-mortem.
Yeah.
The papers of the time love sensationalizing murder stories, mm-hmm. and on this podcast, we try our best to focus on victim-first mentality.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Elma and George are a huge part of this story, and in the end, there are two lost lives connected to Rattenberry's life story, Rattenberry and Elma, and yeah. both of those are extremely tragic.
Yeah.
Because Rattenberry was fine with the affair.
Yeah, he was just living.
He was living.
He was just there.
He was living La Vida Loca in retirement.
Right. Also, he's though, vibing. What happened to his other kids?
I don't know.
He just was like, oh, your mom died. Fuck you.
I don't know. I think so. Because she died. I know. They were adults by the time she died. Oh, were they? They were, yeah. Oh, Frank and Mary. Yeah, they were both adult kids.
Oh, okay. So. Then that's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So, next time you walk around Parliament or the Crystal Gardens, you can remember the architect who, though never formally educated, designed buildings that are quite infamous today.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, if you walk up the steps of the Empress and peer in through the front windows into the lower lobby, you might just spot a slender man with a mustache and a walking cane waiting to hear the people's praise once again for his architectural masterpiece. And that is the life story of Francis Mawson Rattenberry.
Wow.
The end.
Good one. Yeah, he haunts the Empress, so.
He does haunt the Empress, yep.
Guys, go try to find him.
go hunt him down.
He's just there. He just wants you to admire his work.
Yeah. Talk about how much you love it, and maybe he'll be like, ayo, thanks. And give you a fist bump.
Maybe he'll give you some knocks.
Yeah, knock, knock, with his cane.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, some of that story was a little bit confusing, a little bit rocky.
It's fine. That was great.
Doesn't matter.
Nope.
Hit the end was like a boom, ball out of the park, baby.
Yeah.
Which sometimes here on Ghoul Society, that's just how our stories are.
Yeah.
Yeah. So thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks for listening.
Mm-hmm. If you have any questions, comments, critiques,
or concerns.
Concerns. You can email us at ghoulsocietypod@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Instagram at ghoulsocietypod and TikTok at ghoul.societypod. Or you can just search Ghoul Society and you'll find us.
Yeah.
What else?
Oh, you can find all of our resources in each episode's show notes, as well as any trigger warnings for the episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And we will see you next time.
Thanks.
Bye.
Nice.
That was some ASMR for you guys. I'm going to put that at the end of the episode.
The mouth sounds.